It's Debbie Reynolds. I am 61 years old. Today is August the 16th, 2021. I'm in Garden City, Kansas, in my office at the CASA office. And the name of my conversation partner is Carol Geyer, and she's a friend of mine here in Garden City.
Okay, so am I next?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm Carol Geyer. I'm 76. Today's date is August 16th, 2021, and I'm at my house. My conversation partner is Debbie Reynolds, and she's a friend. I'm so happy that she's my friend.
Oh, great. So now we're going to just start off. This is the first of the four questions. So Debbie, why don't you start us off with
sure.
what I put in the chat?
Sure. Carol, what made you want to do this interview today?
Well, I was coerced by some really, really lovely, wonderful friends named Lynn and Deborah, but I'm getting more relaxed and comfortable about the whole thing because of all of you. So this is good.
Great.
And Debbie, what made you want to do this interview today?
Well, actually, I was on a nonprofit, like a catch-up. It's like a weekly call. It's a catch-up call for nonprofits. And the gentleman from HPPR was talking about this project. And lo and behold, he said that my two friends were actually going to be doing the project. And I wished him congratulations because it sounded like really an interesting project. And of course, when they asked me, I said, sure, I'd love to do it.
Great. All right. So now the second part is the second question. Debbie, why don't you go ahead?
Carol, you grew up in Wichita and the Seattle areas and always had an interest in politics through your mother.
Let me just stop just a moment. You're doing great. Just read it as it is.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and I did not make that clear, so that's my mistake. I'm sorry.
I grew up in Wichita in the Seattle area and always had an interest in politics through my mother. I leaned towards caring for and helping the underdog. Our son was born in 1971, and I worked at a number of causes and nonprofits. Our son's school, Scouts, our church, various city and community organizations, always feeling the importance of giving back to one's community. As an artist, I have worked for 20 years alongside many like-minded folks to establish an active art council in our city.
Okay. And Debbie, is there anything that you would like to know more about? You can ask her at this point from her bio.
Not at this time.
Okay.
Okay, I'm reading Debbie's bio. I am a single 61-year-old white woman who has never been married. I was raised by my Southern parents and was instilled early on with the ideas of working hard, being honest, and always doing what was right and respectful. My grandparents' heritage was born in the Appalachian Mountains of Kentucky and Tennessee. I was raised to be fiercely independent and was the first person of my father's family to graduate from college. I am a world traveler who has been to 60 plus countries and six continents. And we don't have time for me to ask you all the questions about the 50 countries and all of your travels. I'm fascinated and just blown away by that.
Well, thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna, so if there's
wine and have, you can tell me about your travels at another time.
Absolutely, I look forward to that. I love to bore people with my traveling stories.
Okay, I'm gonna have you then ask each other this.
Who has been,
sorry, you go ahead.
Who has been the, an influential person in your life, and what did they teach you?
Well, I was thinking, I already mentioned my mother, she was, but I often think back to this teacher that I had for history in my sophomore year in high school. And we had to write papers all the time and about all kinds of different American history. And he was the first one who really laid out the chart of the isms, you know, from the far right to the far left. And I've always remembered exactly how he put it and how, and it's still true today. I mean, it hasn't changed any. So that was, I thought his name was Mr. Keller.
As far as mine, I have so many, but the person that jumped to my mind was my grandmother on my dad's side. She was married at 13. She became a midwife for her coal mining community. And she was just exceptional as far as being a support to her community. And she lived in poverty, was uneducated traditionally. But she was really she was kind of the mayor of their little coal mining community. And she loved everybody. Everybody respected her. Even when I was a young kid and teenagers, even when I was in college, people would always seek her out for her wisdom and come to her house. And I always thought, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful to have somebody love you that much? And she just was so well loved in her community. And I admire her about that. I feel so blessed to be mentored by her. And she was full of stories. She was a gifted storyteller like nobody's business. She never owned a television because she called it the devil's talk box. But boy, she could tell a great story.
Okay. So Carol, could you briefly describe in your own word, or read the question number 4 and respond to that?
Okay. Do you want me to read it and then respond? Or you want me to read it for Debbie?
Actually read it for Debbie.
Okay. Could you briefly describe in your own words your personal political values?
Yeah, sure. I am a registered Republican. I am probably the most unusual Republican. I know only a few others who are as liberal as I am in so many different areas, but I do feel like my core person is very conservative. Raised that way, my parents were that way. Actually, my parents were Democrats, and I can remember my father being so upset the first time I ever voted for Republican. But I really adhere to traditional values, but there's times, many, many times, and the older I get, I lean more and more to the left. And it saddens me that both political parties have become so polarizing, and there's very little stretch to their beliefs, where I feel like I've been all the way to the left, and I can bend to the right, but there's no bending in today's politics, it appears that way to me. And I think that that's very scary times for our country, due to the fact that in life is very gray. And I think we need to learn how to bend. And we'll never get anything accomplished if we're not going to bend in some way or shape or another. But I have voted Republican, but I've also voted for Democrat. And I've had the great fortune of meeting Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter. I just admire anybody who's in the Oval Office. And that's probably from my traditional upbringing. Carol, could you briefly describe in your own words your personal political values?
Well, I used to be a Republican. It was because I believe that Dwight Eisenhower was president when I was in grade school and was, you know, such a great grandfather figure for all of us Kansans. And I believe even now that if his beliefs would be more like a traditional Democrat as far as on the scale of, but I decided that I did not want to be a Republican anymore and became a Democrat and have been for a long time. And my political views are fiscally fairly conservative, but my social and other kinds of views are fiercely liberal.
Can I interject here for just a moment? Yeah. Debbie, you talked about so eloquently, both of you guys, your traditional values from what that Appalachian growing up. Can you give an example of those conservative traditional values that you grew up with?
Oh, I think that the one that came right off my head was going to church every Sunday. That's what you did. And you, no matter what, you was in church every Sunday and you gave 10% tithes back to the church, or actually back to God, that you got up and you went to work every day and you were neighborly. You know, if somebody needed help, you were there to help them out. If, you know, especially if somebody was really suffering, you would invite them to your table, or you would take food to them or bake them a cake or whatever it was. But very early on, I learned that these were the things that you do. I still do these things today. So, and they are a part of me, you know, they are some of my experiences.
And I'm going to, Carol, do you have any questions for Debbie regarding?
Not really. I thought she was very eloquent in her explanation of her upbringing and her traditional values that she gleaned from her grandmother and her parents.
I have a question for Carol. You said you didn't want to become you didn't want to be a Republican anymore. Did you decide to be a Democrat? Was there one single you could pinpoint, like you knew it was a defining moment that you were going to change your political party?
Yep.
Ronald Reagan.
That did it for me. I even voted for Nixon, but Ronald Reagan was, nope.
And that's kind of interesting because you say that your economic beliefs is very conservative, and he was very conservative.
Well, I don't believe trickle down is like conservative. It's idiocy. I'm sorry. But getting back to like your traditional, my mother told me that her grandfather, my grandfather's dad, John Rothy, was the Democratic chairman of Rush County my grandmother and grandfather were married in 1914. So in the very early 1900s, John Rothy, my grandfather, was the chair of the Democratic Party in Rush County. And my other great-grandfather, Christian Galawa, was the Republican chairperson of Rush County. And they did not like each other. So it's not all that new to be a little bit peckish toward the other party. So
okay. Is it different being Republican in Western Kansas? I mean, are Republicans different than elsewhere, Debbie?
I believe so. You know, I was raised in the Midwest, and I've just been in Southwest Kansas little over 20 years. But what I see here in Southwest Kansas, people are, they don't bend. You know, their beliefs are black and white. There's no gray, their beliefs. Where in the Midwest, I see a lot more gray with people's political beliefs. I mean, they still may be a Republican or a Democrat, but there's a lot more gray than what I see as Republicans here in Southwest Kansas. And I can just say, I mean, I'm totally blown away about how Republicans reacted to COVID here in our county. And that I just think that I don't get it. I truly do not get it or understand why they've taken a stand against masks and, you know, all the things that science has taught us, and it is our only line of defense. I don't understand the staunch, you know, debate over it or even against it. I don't understand that. And it could happen in Ohio. I don't know. I don't live in Ohio now, but it really, to me, is quite surprising that they are that far against it. Even in the United States, I think it's kind of crazy how anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers have become. I just really don't understand it.
I totally agree with you on that. I know that I find the difference in Republican and Democrat in Western Kansas. If you're a Democrat, it's don't ask, don't tell. You don't tell anybody that you're a Democrat because people don't want to know that your business may be a Democrat business. And so you don't tell anyone because you might lose business because of it. And that I've found, and I don't know, I found it to be party stuff to be on the Republican end, because I'm saying I used to be a Republican and I was never invited to join the Women's Republican Club, you know, and all that. Of the, you know, the really hotsy-totsy, highfalutin Republican women. And so I think it's more like, I don't know, it's more a little more cult-like than a political party. And I share your horror in the fact that the Republicans seem to be anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers, and it just I just can't believe it. Not all of them, though. I have friends who are Republicans who are, vaccinated and wear masks too. Yeah. So, but the real anti ones are very vocal.
You know what? Really, kind of, it's really a thorn in my side is that you see all these. I have friends who are anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers, you know, and we'll go someplace and this is probably a month or so ago, and it said if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. Well, they don't follow rules either, because they just give people impressions that they are wearing they have been vaccinated. And to me, that's just so wrong. If you so believe in what you believe in, then don't hide behind it. And I just think it's wrong. But I want to say that I'm a Republican and I've never been invited to a hoity-toity Republican woman's luncheon either, Carol, so don't feel bad. They probably just think I'm just I wear a costume or something. I don't know, because I hang out with a bunch of liberals all the time.
Yeah, well, I think for me it was that I lived on the west side of town.
Oh.
That was
yeah, you know, living in Cincinnati, it was like that too. It was east and west, and I lived on the east side, which was the right type, you know, the right zip code. If you lived on the west side, it was the wrong zip code. So I get that as well.
So this is a place where we're at, where you can choose some of these questions to ask your partner. However, I'm sorry that I sent it out in like narrative form. So there's supposed to be a separation between the questions. So I'm sorry. I apologize because it is kind of confusing. You guys want to look at the questions and see which ones that you would like to ask each other?
Well, do you ever feel misunderstood by people with different beliefs than you from the other side of the aisle? And how does that manifest itself and make you feel?
Yeah, I feel like I'm a person with no island at times, or no, you know, that I'm not well received by my Republican friends because of I've think very liberally in so many different areas. And then with my friends who are liberals, depending upon how liberal they are, they don't understand how I could be a Republican. And so I shy away from the conversation a lot of times because there's no, we're never going to meet in the middle. You know, they're never, and I think a lot of times it's people just, they don't want to know. They say we're really good talkers, but we're very poor listeners, in my opinion, humans are. And so when you talk about things like that, they already have you're a Republican, then you don't want to ever hear what I have to say, or you don't believe what I say, or, you know, those are some of the conversations I've had with various people. But people who are like-minded, no matter what political affiliation they are, those are my people, because it doesn't matter if they're blue or red. But I do feel like an island sometimes, just because of where I live and who I am. I think in Southwest Kansas, you're an outsider. I moved here 20 years ago and I'm still an outsider. And I think that it's just an interesting place to be. I mean, when I came here, I was first told that, oh, you'll be here to build your resume and you'll move on in 5 years. Well, it's been 20 plus years, but I'm still not native. I still don't have those roots that go deep in this area. So I'm still considered an outsider in a lot of circles.
I'm surprised that you feel that way, that you feel like you're an outsider, because I think of you as a really important person in our community.
Oh.
And then getting to know you better, it was like, and she's lots of fun too. So I had no idea of your political, you know, leanings. But the next question was the one that I want to answer. Do you ever feel troubled by the people with the same beliefs as you? And I sometimes think that we end up being identified by certain catchphrases, like that one about defund the police. That's, you know, Democrats have got that now on their shoulders, on their heads, that they want to defund the police. And it's so scary to think that, because we don't really want to defund the police. We want to free up the police for doing what they should do and not have to worry about the mental health issues that arise and have to, you know, that they have to deal with, and the domestic violence. They should have other people that they rely on to help them with those situations. And I had heard just the other day that the Garden City Police Department is doing exactly that, and that they are bringing in more people for the issues of, you know, when they find some guy on the corner that's just whacked out and the police don't know what to do with him. They don't know what to say to him. If they can bring in a mental health person or someone with drug experience, they can do so much more and not have it be a policing solution.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, yes.
Yeah, I think the whole, you know, defunding the Black Lives Matter, defunding the police, there was so many things that's happened that's polarized our country, you know, that eventually I have great hope that we'll come in the middle and agree that things have to change in a lot of different areas in our country. And, but somebody takes this little seed idea and they blow it into a big concept, and then the other side takes it and runs with it. And it was never intended to be that way. You know. But I think I worked on a psych unit, Carol, for 5 years as a behavior specialist. And I saw what police had to deal with between psychiatric emergencies and sometimes psychiatric emergencies mixed with drugs.
Yeah.
And those are tough, tough, tough situations that you just don't know how to handle. Very scary. You just don't know what's going to happen. You can't predict what's going to happen. And so, I mean, it's so multidimensional of these policemen who are going out there trying to defuse these situations. Unless you've done it or you've been out there, or you've been a part of something like that, you don't understand how scary it is and how they may I'm not defending them, but how they might overreact to something because of fear themselves. I saw it all over and over working in a psych unit, policemen coming in scared. You know, I never dealt with anybody shooting anybody other than one time. But it was mostly out of fear. Was it because they were trying to be brutal? But, you know, that's the other side. We have policemen who probably don't have the personality or what it takes to be somebody balanced in a uniform. You know, I think there is police brutality. What has happened to so many people is terrible. And shouldn't happen.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
They don't have the training for the, for those kinds of things. And even if it's happened to them a lot of times, they hate those situations. They don't like to, I have new grandson-in-law who's a Garden City police officer. And those are really scary, scary, you know, the domestic disagreements and fights, and it can be really volatile and horrifying for the police officers as well as the people that are, like the children that are enduring it.
Yes, that's, you know, I do that now. I work with children who are removed from the home, and a lot of time is because of drugs or domestic violence or neglect or abuse. And you know, you read the affidavit, what the policeman's had to do during that removal was, yeah, horrifying. It doesn't make our papers, but it's scary what's happening in our community today. I think I already said this, but my hopes is that we can all come together and get along. And, you know, you look at history and some of it repeats itself, but I think like you go back to a lot of our history in America that we were able to come together and build a stronger nation and do great things. I have great hope that we can do that again. I think that, I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime, but I still have great hope that it will happen. And I think a lot of people will have to make concessions on both sides in order to get there. Because I think that most people that are in the United States, we're probably pretty balanced. You know, I don't think we're extremists. But there is some out there. I mean, I'm not naive to think that there's not. But I think that the majority of people are pretty balanced in, we all want the same thing, opportunities, and, you know, be able to, you know, make our life better, no matter where, no matter where you start, is to make your life better. That's my hope.
I have hopes for the nation and for the world in that we can somehow work together to get global, the climate change and the global warming situation under control and reverse it, because I think it's going to be horrible. I mean, I worry so much about my grandkids and the other, you know, young people, what they're going to have to live through and what they're, I keep telling my grandkids, you've got to be thinking of stuff to do that, you know, all these young people have got to be the ones that solve the problems that we've left them with. And I am heartened by, like, for instance, here in Garden City, our high school, I have such great hopes for our young people here because we have such a diverse racial and ethnic population here. And the kids at our high school, I think, get along so beautifully. And there was a guy here who was campaigning for office, and he is a person who has been all over the country. He worked in Silicon Valley in California, and he said, "I have never been to a better high school in any part of the country." He said he talked to these kids, and he said they weren't all grouped in like little white groups and little brown groups and little black groups. You know, everybody was mixed together. And they were interested in what he was saying, and they were attentive, and they, you know, he was just blown away by our kids. And I'm thinking, I have really great hopes if the kids can keep up this respect and love for their diverse friends, and that the color thing just doesn't have to be primary anymore. Mm-hmm. And we allow them to lead in that direction.
I agree with you with climate change. We cannot stick our head in the sand, not another day. It is our whole world is going up in flames. And we're sitting here saying, no, we don't have climate issues. Yes, we do. So, but what do we do? I mean, I look at what I can do, but what do we do? And I think our only hope is to vote people in office who believe the same, you know, will do something, will appropriate money to figure out how to stop it or how to reverse it. Or, yeah, it's scary for me.
It's scary.
It's very scary. Yes. I was about the kids in high school. You know, one of the group of kids that I get to work with is Real Men, Real Leaders. Yeah. I am amazed by this group of young boys. You know, they have 100% graduation rate. They 100% have graduated who are in their program. That is something to say in our community that needs to be replicated all over America. And they just, these kids are just so, no matter what they're doing, they're just happy to be doing it. And they're just, they get along so well. And they're really teaching to serve their community, you know, for a long, long time. We haven't seen a lot of social capital and building community, and my hope is that we'll see that come back again. We really haven't seen it since the 50s, and so hopefully we'll start seeing young people who want to serve again in boards or organizations or just to be a part of their community. I really have hope with that group.
They are wonderful. That's a great group. You see them all the time in different places. They're picking up trash or they're helping do stuff, you know, for different festivals and events. And they are, like you say, really great kids.
Yeah. And they have a leadership program that if you go to so many leadership events, then they get like little plaques or coins or something. And it may not mean a lot to us, but it means a lot to them because
that's cool. They have a reward that's visible to them. That's neat.
Right. Yeah. It's just a little coin. It talks about leadership and, you know, community and family. It's really kind of a neat program that the powers that be there have built and need to be commended.
So,
really.
Do we go to the next question?
Yes.
Okay.
Or whichever one you want. This is just a suggestion.
Okay.
Or you could address another one of the questions in here, or if you're curious about something, you generate your own question for each other. It's completely what your curiosity is.
I will go first, Carol. I was raised very, very traditional Baptist / Pentecostal. Now, you can't get more conservative than that. But now I go to a community congregational church. It's just a little bit more liberal. The pastor is really conservative. But as I have aged over the years, in some of these more traditional or very, very conservative religions, I sometimes have a very hard time of seeing Jesus there, because Jesus was not so conservative. And so, you know, I think when, as my grandmother would say, they're so narrow-minded, they could look through a keyhole with both eyes. That, you know, I think that some religions are like that, and that's a religion. That's not your faith. So I think as I get older, I don't really want to participate in a church that's like that. I struggle in my own church today sometimes, some of the things that are said, because I think that Jesus is so much bigger and much more loving and caring than a lot of churches portray. It's more condemnation and more, you know, you're going to go to hell. It's the fire and brimstone kind of preaching. And I was raised on that, so I understand it. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you get older, you understand the lovingness of God and the kindness of God. And so I probably am more fitted to be in a Methodist church than I, this is much more liberal than where I am even at today. But sometimes God just leads you to where you're supposed to be. But I struggle sometimes where my pastor is really, really conservative. And that's some of the things he says it's kind of like, I don't know if I believe that, but you know, you don't want to let one bad apple or one bad sermon spoil a whole bunch of other really good sermons. I guess what I'd like to say.
Well, I find that my political views are challenging my religious ones. I grew up in the United Church of Christ, which is what the community church is here. Mm-hmm. And then when I was married, I became Catholic. And I've been a Catholic for 56 years now. We've been married for 56 years. And And just lately, I can hardly stand to, now there are so many that are going to the conservative, the really ultra conservative side, and it's like they want to have the religious freedom to discriminate against other people. They're saying their religious freedom is being challenged. Well, it's because they don't want, I mean, they want to be, they don't want gay people to have, you know, to be able to adopt children. They don't want somebody who is pro-choice and not just pro-life knee-jerk, that you're, I don't feel so as welcome anymore in my own church as I used to. And we used to feel like St. Mary's was fairly liberal. We had Precious Blood priests who were much more Christ-like in their homilies and in their beliefs. And I don't know, I'm struggling with that. So, yeah. I think it's awful that the Catholic bishops are saying that Joe Biden can't go to communion, for God's sake. I mean, you know, if you're pointing fingers, you look around and there's three of them pointing back at you. Mm-hmm. So
I always say this because we're all on our own journey of faith, whatever faith you believe in, that you got to work out your own salvation. Who am I to say, oh, you're homosexual, you won't go to heaven, or you're living in sin, or what some of these things the conservative church brings out. My, you know, I would probably just eke by the skin of my teeth getting into pearly gates myself. So who am I to say, oh, you know, you're homosexual, or you've done this, or you've done that, and, you know, and condemn somebody. I feel like that's wrong. I think every person has to work out their own salvation, and far be it from me to say somebody's not going to go to heaven or going to go to hell, because I'm just trying to make it myself.
Yeah. And actually, personally, religiously, I have not really changed. My beliefs are still the same as they were when I was a little kid, even though, you know, I'm a Catholic. It's just not as, I guess I'm sort of a Protestant Catholic.
Carol, how do you navigate your current beliefs, religious or political, at family gatherings?
I keep my mouth shut, zipped, because it's a bad deal to talk about any of it unless you're with certain ones that you know share the same beliefs. So just zip it in. Talk about the weather. How about you?
You know, mine's kind of different. You know, being raised in the South, we were raised to say what you have to say. You're still family. We still love you. And so it's interesting how I have three brothers. One has passed away, but I have two still living. That when we were together, we would talk about things that, you know, we could just poke fun at each other. Like, that's a crazy thing to say. What? You're going to do? I mean, it's speaking our truth, but it's using a way of humor saying, well, that's crazy. Why would you do that? You know, but it still gives you permission to say what you feel. I think my brothers are a lot more conservative than I am. So they sometimes look at me like I'm the crazy one, but, you know, we were always raised, no matter what, you may have differences, you may have a conflict, but at the end of the day, you still love each other and you're still family. But then I know personal friends who've had great division and they don't talk to their family anymore because of religion or their political affiliation. That we just wasn't raised that way, to be honest with you, Carol. We just, you know.
Yeah. Well, we talk to each other. I just don't tell them what I think because they don't really like what I think. So I just keep my mouth shut. So it's just, you know, you have to just find other things to talk about, which is not all that hard. So, and they know me and I know them. So,
yeah.
Although sometimes I have been really felt threatened by some, not family members, but threatened that, you know, that there might be a danger in expressing views, as you know, certain types of views that, you know,
with your family,
not with family, no, but with others. With, well, there's one, it's an in-law sort of family, so it's not
yeah, I agree with you. Sometimes it's like it's better just to not engage, you know, because you're not going to change that person's opinion and you're certainly not going to change ours. So,
yeah,
you know, right. Sometimes it's better to be quiet.
Yeah. How do you want to be remembered?
I've never thought of this. I mean, I think that I would want people to think of me as being kind, funny, strong, independent, could tell a great story. But I don't think of anything else. I think I want a funny headstone, like, you know, like something that would say, like, I told you I was sick. I mean, it's just me. I like to tell jokes and have fun. So I think I will be buried with my father, and my family is from the Hatfields, of the great Hatfields and McCoy story. And my father is buried there. My whole father's side of the family is buried there. And I have a plot next to my father that if I'm still single when I pass away, that's my plot.
Wow.
Yeah, you didn't know that about me, Carol?
No, the Hatfields and the McCoys. Wow.
Usually people say, oh, that explains why you are the way you are. I think my dad never met a stranger, and that's on my dad's tombstone. And I think I would probably want to be remembered from humor and kindness, and that I never met a stranger and was always kind to a stranger. What about yourself? How would you want to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as someone who cares about other people and who was always kind to people and generous. And I would like to be known as someone who loved deeply, loved my family and my friends. That I was always willing to say, yes, I'll do that. I can't say no. So I guess I don't, and I hope that people would think that I was funny. I try, try to be. I think humor is somehow at times how we navigate everything. You know, you've got to be able to laugh or you'll just burst out crying sometimes. So I guess
I agree. Laughter is the best medicine. It does. There's nothing like a good laugh, you know, especially when the chips are down or you're in a rough spot in your life. And so,
right.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I have really enjoyed this.
Yeah, me too.
That's great. And I can, we're at the 50 minute mark, and I have to say that the way you described how you want to be remembered is how you're thought of now. So it is, you are what you would like to be remembered. That's how you guys are now. So thank you so much for sharing with each other and for having patience with me and us with the beginnings of this. And Carol, it sounds like you learned some things about Debbie and Debbie vice versa.
It was great. I still want to find out about all your travels. I am so envious of all of these 60 plus countries that you've been in. It's so cool.
Well, hey, you could join me. I'm going to my 60 something. I don't know. I have to look it up. But we are going to Antarctica. It would be my 7th continent. So I'm pretty excited about that. But Deborah and Dale, and there's quite a few other people who's going in January. And it's such a great deal that we're like, I never thought I could get to Antarctica, but it looks like, God willing, I'll be there in January. So
interesting.
I'm sad that Lynn's not going to be able to join us.
Sorry.